Are you listening to us on Apple Podcasts or Spotify or any other platform where you can leave a rate or review? Do you like what we're doing? If the answer to all of that is yes, please consider quickly giving us a 5-star rate. And if you wouldn't mind leaving us a nice review, we greatly appreciate that as well. Okay, let's do this.
Hello, welcome to the Ghost of Harrenhal. My name's Simon.
And I'm McKelly.
Thank you for joining us for episode 232 of our chapter-by-chapter book review of A Song of Ice and Fire by George Martin. Today, we'll be discussing chapter 6 of A Feast for Crows, that's Aria 1.
And as always, we're going to chat about the chapter and try not to spoil any future plot points for you, unless you're in one of the spoiler tiers. And hopefully we're going to provide you some entertainment along the way.
We'll summarise what happened, discuss our thoughts on it, provide some useful background, compare it to the television show, indulge in a little pedantry, and cover some relevant news and listener correspondence. Be sure to check out the show notes and provide some additional information about the characters and geography of this chapter. How are you, sir?
I'm doing all right. I'm doing all right. My dog is not doing as well.
Oh, no.
My poor little sweet Penny. She went to get her teeth cleaned at the vet yesterday, which you know is like a big deal with dogs because they have to put them under and all that stuff. And so, you know, she hates the vet so much. You know, you've seen her when her little ears get to shaking.
Yeah, yeah.
She's got those big ears on her little head. And when she gets nervous, her ears shake like a tree in a storm.
So, she's a cute dog.
I drop her off and she's all jittery and stuff. I'm like, it's going to be okay. You'll be back in just a couple hours with fresh breath that doesn't make people want to vomit. So the vet calls and says, well, okay, I've gotten a look at her teeth, and I'm going to have to pull 10 of them.
10?
10 teeth.
You're not kidding about the stink.
Well, you know, we feed her one of those greeny fresh breath thing, toothbrushes every morning, and she only gets dry dog food. So, you know,
it's the chocolate.
But he said, so it's the chocolate. You know, we give her chocolate every night.
Why does nobody warn me about these things?
He said, here was the good news, that dogs primarily just chew with their back teeth. So it's all her front teeth, just pretty much all of her front teeth. And she'll be able to eat just fine in time. She's going to have stitches and stuff, so not right away. But, you know, she'll be able to eat with those back teeth. And that the back teeth were really good. No cavities. They looked healthy. They just needed a cleaning. So, she came back. And her poor little, she's got that beard around her little mouth. And the left side of her beard was stained in blood.
Oh.
I was like, why would they give her back to us like this? Clean that blood up before you hand me our precious little dog. So.
She doing better today?
She has this trachea issue where it collapses. That's why she has to wear a harness and not like a leash on the collar because it causes her trachea to collapse. And they put a tube down her throat. And I think it irritated her trachea because she has been like taking these like emphysema barking coughs every probably 20 minutes all through the night too. No, Stacy and I, neither of us, Stacy nor I nor the dog, none of us slept. So
that's miserable.
But you know, the vet said it wasn't really the teeth weren't decaying or anything. They're just old and loose because she's an elderly dog now. You know, so.
God.
Stacey was like, couldn't they have just fallen out on their own? Do we need to pay you to do that?
That tracks.
She'll be okay. She is a tough, fragile little thing. The dog.
That segues into my own story of the week, actually. As you know, as I've mentioned on the pod before, I have to take a pill every day now for the rest of my life.
Oh, yes, right.
And one of my dogs is also a little neurotic, and so she gets a pill every morning and every evening. And there have been mishaps, because it's hard first thing in the morning, because it is literally the first thing I do. I mean, quite often, before I pee, I deal with the dog, because we all have kind of random getting up times in the house and I'm always first up. So I try to deal with the dogs to calm the house down, you know, so that they're not disturbing everyone. And
oh, that's nice of you.
Well, I mean, it works for me too, you know, because then I don't have irate family members. But I'm bleary eyed and a little bit. And so, you know, that one time I gave the dogs the wrong food. And so Penny ended up eating Twiggy's pill.
Oh, right. I do remember this. Yes, yes.
So the other morning I was standing at the kitchen counter wrapping a pill in cheese. And I realized I was wrapping my statin in cheese.
It helps it go down easier.
Actually, didn't hate it. Swallowed it without any trouble. Fortunately,
might start doing this on the daily.
Before I realized that it was on its way to the dog, I did realize what I was doing. It's a good job they're a different shape, because I would not have noticed. I was absolutely out of it.
give the dog your pill, and you take the dog's pill.
The dog's pill seems to have no effect on the dog, except when you give it to the other dog, and then you see the effect it has, because that other dog was absolutely out of her gourd all day on that pill. So.
All right. Well, it's good you caught it when you did.
Yes, yes, yes. Disaster averted. My other story is, I'm a bit injured, and so my competitive season has started with me as goalkeeper. And I'm not a very experienced goalkeeper, and I'm not a very good goalkeeper. And I think the statistics will back me up on this, because 2 games into the season, and these games are 44 minutes long, so the total of 2 games is actually less than a full soccer match. I've conceded 12 goals.
Oh, so last week I think you mentioned you conceded 4, right? So
8.
So it got a lot worse. Yes. Oh my goodness.
8 this time. Absolutely.
Has anybody thought about just putting a scarecrow in front of the net and seeing if that works better?
You don't know how many good saves I'm making. I'm letting in some stinkers, but I'm making a few good saves as well. So yeah, not going too well.
Oh, it can only improve,
right? My team,
right? I mean,
bless their hearts, they can't make eye contact with me at the end of the game, but they're not saying anything, you know.
Well, you know, it's you can only go up.
Yes,
from
exactly.
There. I mean,
what
are the chances you give up 10?
So we've lost 4-0 and 8-1, and as one of the team pointed out, we've let in twice as many goals this week, but we've scored infinitely more.
That's right. Yeah, that's a statistician right there.
Exactly.
Coming
up
with the...
All right, well, let's get down to business. How did we leave Arya Stark? Well, last we saw of Arya, she had left Sandor the Hound Clegane to die on the road to Saltpans. On arriving at the port, she sold her goods and tries to buy passage to Eastwatch to see her brother Jon. But she doesn't have enough, and the departing ship is heading for Braavos. That rings a bell for her, and she pulls out Jaqen H'ghar's coin and says the magic word. Please. No. Valar Morghulis. And the captain immediately invites her aboard and offers her the stately penthouse.
Yeah, something like that.
Mikkeli, why don't we give the summary of this one?
Well, Arya's talking to Daniel, the son of the ship's captain. There's a star low in the eastern horizon. He calls it the Star of Home. She muses on home and her lack of one. She thumbs Needle's palm, wishing for... well, she doesn't even know what to wish for anymore. The crew have been nice to her, but have never bothered to ask her name. They just call her Salty because she joined them at Saltpans. The star resolves into 2. Denyo tells her the Titan sees them.
Arya recalls stories from old Nan about the Titan of Braavos and how it would eat the flesh of high-born maidens. She's not worried. No flesh on her. She's learned a bit more bravosi from the crew, and she asks if the Titan is the god of Braavos. But Denyo tells her that all gods are honored in Braavos. She rejects his assertion that the 7 are hers. They've never done her any good. But neither did the old gods, come to think of it. Her dad told her that in the winter the pack survives, but the lone wolf dies. But her pack is all dead, and she's still going.
Denyo points out that the Titan of Braavos is now visible. He's impressive, but really not much bigger than the Baelor statue in King's Landing. However, as the minutes pass, he keeps getting bigger and bigger until he looms enormous in front of them. As they pass underneath, she sees various defensive elements, and realizes Baylor wouldn't reach the Titan's knee. A huge blast shocks Arya, warning the arsenal of a ship's arrival. As they pass into the lagoon, she sees the arsenal, a small island covered with war machines. Two galleys race toward them, but the captains know each other, and the Titan's daughter passes without incident.
She's rowed ashore by the captain's other son, Yorko. She now sees the city is a series of islands, canals, and bridges. He shows her some of the sights before dropping her at the temple of the many-faced god. The door is locked. She pounds on it futilely. She holds up her iron horn and says, Valar Morghulis. The door opens. She steps in. The doors close. Her eyes adjust to the dark. It seems bigger on the inside than it was on the outside.
Within, there are statues seemingly to many gods. And in the center of the temple, she finds a pool about 10 feet across. Beside it, a young man weeps. He dips his fingers in and then licks them. She offers him a cup of the water, and he says, Valar Morghulis. Valar Dohaeris, she replies. He drinks, drops the cup, and lurches away to an alcove. She notices a bleeding stab wound in his gut. Many of the alcoves are occupied by seemingly the dead and the dying. A cowled waif grabs her arm, but doesn't understand when Arya warns her not to touch her. But a robed man confirms that he understands.
He gives her the lowdown on the religion. The many-faced god has countless faces, but we all face him eventually. She produces the coin and Jaqen H'ghar's name, but the man denies knowing him. He asks for Arya's name, and she lies, but he sees through everyone. Finally, she admits the truth. He asks her if she fears death. She says no, but he tests her, lowering his cowl to reveal a skeleton face with a worm creeping from the eye socket. He demands a kiss. She obliges and tries to eat the worm for good measure. He, now sporting a very kindly face, laughs and asks if she's hungry. Yes, but not for food.
We'll be right back.
Hello, friends. Are you ready to make some unforgettable memories? Well, if so, consider the Marriott Bonvoy program. Discover the perfect destination for your summer getaway and unlock exclusive deals on luxurious accommodations. With our affiliate partnership, you'll enjoy unbeatable savings and a seamless booking experience. Don't let summer slip away. Visit Marriott Bonvoy today and make this vacation season one for the books. Use our Ghosts of Harrenhal affiliate page to check it all out and buy Bonvoy points or give some as a gift. The link to our page is in the show notes. Well, it's a good chapter. It's a good portion of it felt kind of like a travelogue of Braavos.
Yes, it's definitely introducing us to Braavos as a place. It seems very pretty. Made me think of Venice. I don't know if it had the same effect with you.
It had the exact same effect. When I read that in the notes, I thought to myself, well, apparently it must, because we had the same thought. And then I went, and, you know, it's the canals. It's a city of canals and bridges and poled boats.
I mean, that's the biggest clue, because they have boats that are being pushed by a pole rather than road. So that's very Venetian.
Yes. So I went and did a little Google searching, and it appears a lot of other people think the same thing.
I noticed Game of Thrones wasn't filmed there. They filmed this in Croatia and some other places as well. I think the water scenes were Croatia.
Okay. Yeah. Well, probably cheaper, I guess. Venice is probably an expensive city to film in.
Yeah. So, early on in the chapter, she recites her prayer, and it's getting a little lighter because of the people that have died.
Right.
And I kept worrying that it was always going to grow faster than it shrank. You know, she was always going to add more names faster than she could get rid of them off the other end. But it is smaller than it's been for a while.
Well, the strife that she's gone through in the people, how quickly her list came into form, it makes sense that you would think that. But I was thinking back on, so there's what, 6 people left on her list: Gregor Clegane, Dunsan, Raff the Sweetling, Sir Ilyen, Sir Marin, and Cersei. I believe that's the complete list. So she hasn't added a name since Harrenhal.
Right.
When she added Gregor, Raff the Sweetling, and Dunsan, she probably added them as the, you know, that terrible march to Harrenhal.
Yeah, yeah.
And then Sir Ilyen, Meryn, and Cersei, they're the, you know, they're the old crew. They've been there for a long time.
The OGs.
Yes.
I will say, I wonder if she learns more about what's gone on in the realm, if she ever does, if people with the last name Bolton and Frey might get added to this list.
If she adds Freys to the list, it's going to grow really fast.
She's going to have to narrow that down.
Yes. She's just going to have to say House Frey, because she's going to fall, if she does this nightly prayer like she's been doing, she's going to fall asleep before she gets through all the Freys.
Walder Frey, Walder Frey, Walder Frey, Walder Frey.
Just the Walders.
She gets rid of one of those. She won't know which one to get rid of.
Which is it? Three? Is it six? Which Walder Frey was it? And she picks up another nickname in this chapter. Salty, because they picked her up in Salt Pans, which I think we just mentioned in the summary. And you know, at the end of the chapter, when the man with the cowled hood, you know, that turns into a kindly faced man, asks her what her name is, and she starts listing some of her nicknames.
Right.
And you know, she's got a lot.
Yeah, she does.
I think she mentions. I know she mentions Salty, Nan. My mother called me Nan, but they call me Weasel, Squab, and Ari, right? Yes.
And I think she tries Arya on its own as well, and he's like, come on, keep going, and finally she tells him the truth. But he sees through every one of those lies, which is interesting. So
yes.
Yeah. I'm always curious what these religions give you, and this one apparently gives you the ability to tell when people are fibbing.
I guess so.
At least about their names.
Right. She skips Lumpy Head, Lumpy Face, Arya Underfoot, and Arya Horseface. But at least the last two just got her actual name thrown in there.
That's true. That is true. Yeah.
But yeah, speaking of her nicknames, you know, no other character has anything even like the list of aliases that she goes by or has gone by throughout this story. And to me, it's always felt like... it exemplifies or maybe amplifies her identity confusion or crisis that she's been dealing with since her father's death, basically.
So do you think that having all these aliases distances herself from herself?
Exactly. That's exactly what I think. Yes.
Which, of course, she has to do it to a certain extent.
Yes.
But you think
cases.
It might have a sort of psychological impact on her in that she can never quite get back to who she was because she's been these other people.
Right. Yes. Now, I mean, on the ship, the Titan's daughter that she just took here to Braavos, she could have gone by Arya. I don't imagine they would, you know, these Braavosi sailors would have a clue.
It's not a great idea, though, because if you do say that, then they go to ports and they talk to people.
Yes,
you know?
They do. Yes. See, I hadn't thought that all the way through. Clearly she had.
I wonder, actually, you've made me think about the fact that the ship was called the Titan's Daughter. I wonder if you had a boat and you called it the Titan's Daughter. It just becomes a ship just because of the size of the name it's got.
Right, yeah, it can't be anything else. It can't be a little rowboat, the Titan's Daughter. Doesn't sound right. But I wondered, you know, this exercise at the end of the chapter, where she's going through her names and then eventually gets to Arya of House Stark. I wonder if that could be cathartic to her, to say out loud to someone, I am Arya of House Stark.
Yeah. And also, coming back to the religion, it does seem that names are important to this religion. You know, that you need to own up to who you are and then abandon who you are to be part of this religion, you know?
Right. Yes. Agreed. Yeah.
So Arya recalls Ned saying, when the cold wind blows, the lone wolf dies, but the pack survives. But she, not unreasonably, thinks that he had it backwards, that she, the lone wolf, is the one that's surviving, and those who stayed as a pack, or at least fragmented packs, have all been dispatched.
Yeah, it's, you know, if only she knew how wrong she is
about
the fact that she thinks her whole family's dead, but, you know, I mean...
In many respects, actually, Ned's words are probably truer now, because if they had all stayed together, they probably wouldn't all be dead, you know?
Yes, that is very true, yeah. I just wonder how this belief might affect how she sees relationships and the importance she puts on developing them, if she thinks, I'm better off as a lone wolf because everyone around me dies anyway. Anyone I get close to dies or disappears.
That's very true. And actually sort of also goes to the recent Brienne chapter. She too wants to be a lone wolf and doesn't want to form relationships with people.
Right. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Speaking of her pack, or the Stark / Jon Snow family, we've got Sam, Gilly, and Aemon, and Daeron heading toward Braavos. Now, it's a huge city, but could she possibly find out that Bran is still alive by coming across Sam and discovering who each other are?
That ship isn't going to sink because of his loose lips, let me tell you.
Well, yeah. I mean, like, he swore that he wouldn't tell John, right? Did he swear that won't tell anybody? Couldn't there be some sort of loophole here?
I can only tell you this. He's promised not to tell John.
Right. And if you do, don't tell him I told you.
We'll be right back.
This episode is sponsored by Audible. To get a free audiobook, or two if you're an Amazon Prime member, go to our exclusive URL, audibletrial.com/ghostsharrenhal. You can find the link in our show notes.
So thinking about Arya's psychology a little bit, she thumbs the pommel of needle while she tries to make a wish. And that's kind of, to me, that was sort of probably just a sort of nervous habit, but also sort of like makes me think her wishes tend towards the violent a little bit. But
yes.
But then she can't even come up with an actual wish. You know, she's there, she's in this brand new opportunity, and she tries to wish for something and can't think of anything to wish for, which is, that psychologically is good. Again, not a shrink, not a psychologist of any sort, but I would be concerned by a child who can't make a wish.
Yes. Now, I do have a minor in psychology, so I think I can speak on this with
take
credentials.
Take the baton.
With full credentialed minor.
I shall lay back on the couch while you diagnose.
No, I agree with you entirely, though. You know, children should have wishful minds, just in general, you know? Like, I hadn't really thought about the fact that... I thought about the fact that she can't even... She doesn't even know what she wants anymore in life. Does she want a family, you know, some sort of connection to people? Does she want to find, you know, revenge? What does she want?
I mean, the only thing she has, you know, running through her life is this list, you know? And that's pretty depressing, pretty bleak that that's all she's got.
Incredibly unhealthy, too, especially for a little girl like that.
She also, multiple times in this chapter, she denies being scared. When the blast of the Titan makes everyone jump, she says she wasn't actually scared.
Right.
She's not scared of the skull with the worm growing out of its eye socket, which I would have been.
Yeah, me too. I think I found it a little bit disturbing that she wasn't more scared at that face. Like, what has this poor girl seen in life? Unfortunately, we know that she's not scared by that face. But she also, when Yorko leaves her at the bottom of the stairs to the Temple of the Many-Faced God, she runs up the stairs two at a time so that nobody will ever think that she is afraid.
Right, yep.
So yep. I actually thought this was the other thing when you put your notes in first to this week. And the Venice thing, I had the same thought on, and I also noticed that multiple times she tells herself or says out loud, I'm not afraid.
But at the same time, she does admit that she wants to stay on the Titan's daughter. She,
to herself.
She was happy on that ship. Yes. She was, you know, the people liked her, she liked them. But...
Yeah, you know, once again, Arya's left on her own, which we've said so many times, basically since the sack of the Tower of the Hand, that she, no matter what the circumstance, she ends up on her own. And I just have to say, it's kind of a cold move by Captain Ternicio to send this 10-year-old girl off alone in this city. Now,
the coin means something.
Yeah, it's not his responsibility to find her a home, but it would be hard to let this little girl loose in a city where he must know that she doesn't speak the language, because
right. He
talks to her in the common tongue, and she can only interact with his sons other than, you know, just simple words from the rest of the crew. So, but at the end of the chapter, the man says that the House of Black and White is no place for Arya Stark. And Arya says, please, I have no place to go. So finally, she showed some vulnerability and said, I need help. I don't have anywhere to go. And I wondered if it was possibly not a coincidence that it came immediately after speaking her true name, getting back to little 10-year-old Arya Stark.
Yes, yes, yes. To get to that point, she'd let down her guards to the point where she was back to being her vulnerable self. Interesting.
Yes. Yeah.
I mentioned this on the Sustainer call earlier this week, but I have crossed an ocean to start a new life.
That you have.
But as has Arya Stark. And I will tell you, there's quite a lot of terror involved in that.
I'm sure.
Even when you're 27 years old, you have money in your pocket, you have a place to live and a job lined up.
Right. Big difference. Mean,
I didn't have one coin. I had 200 of them. I didn't have to hold them up at the door to my apartment.
Yes. Yes.
But yeah, it was scary then. I cannot imagine what it would be like to do it as a 10-year-old girl.
And by yourself.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I was by myself. I didn't know anyone, but it's different. Right. I was a grown-up.
Oh, yes. Yeah. I mean, there's a lot of 10-year-old kids out there that have moved to across an ocean to a new city, but usually they have a family with them.
Right. Yes.
Not
the
solo.
One thing I'll say, though, it was exhilarating looking back on it, and the sense of potential and possibility that comes with it does when you're 27, solve that terror somewhat.
Sure. Yeah. I could understand
that. I wasn't
that.
10.
Right. Big distinction. Big distinction.
I felt it on the inside, but I wasn't. I was a grown-up. So, Denyo, the son of the captain, provides a history of Braavos. The moon singers led them there to avoid the dragons of Valyria.
Yeah.
Are you going to talk more about this?
I am. In background, we are going to learn more about these moon singers.
Let's save that for then. So the Titan is an impressive statue, for sure. He straddles the entryway to the lagoon. His lower half was a natural arch, and the arch is skirted in armour with room for people and arrow slits and murder holes. Above, his torso was built upwards and is hollow and is occupied with more defences. One hand rests on the mountain, the other holds a raised sword. He bellows when a ship passes through to alert the garrison, and the garrison come out to check out that ship, make sure it's welcome.
Right. It's pretty neat. I mean, it's pretty amazing structure. I can't imagine how much effort it took to construct such a
It's brand the builder levels of building this thing. I mean,
yes.
I mean, the Statue of Liberty is an impressive statue, but you couldn't sail a ship between her legs.
No, she's sitting on a pedestal, you know? She's sitting on an island. This is spanning two seamounts, you know, two huge structures in their own right.
Yeah. So the main religion of Braavos appears to be the Moonsingers, who you're going to talk about. But Relor features, there's also a Sept of the Seven. Denyo says that only Westerosi go to the Sept of the Seven. It's not like it's spreading to Braavos, it's just there's a lot of Westerosi sailors come through.
Sure.
It does seem to be quite a secular city, though, because, so obviously accepting of religions, but also secular. The row of impressive statues that Arya sees, she thinks of them as gods, but they actually are the sea lords of Braavos. So, money and expenditure is put into the secular rulers, not just the religious ones.
Right, yeah.
On the subject of names and this religion, it does feel like names are very important to this religion. And one of the things that clued me into that is that both the captain and the sons want Arya to confirm that she knows their names before they say goodbye to her.
Right.
Like that her, whatever she's going towards. I mean, obviously she's got some special passcode in that coin and in the words Valar Morghulis. And whatever she's going towards, they feel the need to stress to her, me, Simon McGrother, did you a favor, right?
Right.
You remember it, right? So I don't know how that's going to work out, but it feels like she's going to get embroiled in something fairly scary for other people.
And it's not just the Tarnesio and his sons. The crew also, some of them ignore her, and some of them point at their chest and say their names over and over again until she knows it.
And always never asking her name.
Right. So I wonder, you know, Jack and Hagar gave her the coin. Tarnesio saw the coin and is taking her here to the House of Black and White. So he and probably all these Bravasi sailors must have some idea that that coin is associated with that temple.
Right.
And they must know whatever goes on in that temple.
Right.
And they want her to remember, we did you a solid.
Right.
So.
Because.
You
need to remember our faces because we may not remember yours.
Yes, exactly. There's no point in asking you your name next time we see you. You might not look like you do now.
That's absolutely right. That could well be it, yeah.
Now, we've discussed that previously that Jack and Hagar is possibly a faceless man. He's the one that gave her the coin. And we saw this cowed man's face change from a skeleton into a kindly man. So
he can do the same trick, yeah.
Yeah, so it stands to reason that Tarnesio possibly thinks that Arya is a faceless man.
Or is a recruit towards becoming one.
Perhaps. Right, yes, yes. Right.
So one thing I wondered about, did the door open for the coin or for her saying Valar Morghulis? Because she did the two thing at the same time. And I thought about it, and I think I came up with the logical answer. It was the words, not the coin. Because the dying come here to die.
Yeah.
They can't all be carrying coins.
Coin-carrying members of the Temple of the Many-Faced Gods.
Right. I mean, if everybody in Braavos carries one of those coins, the sea captains must be constantly getting diverted. Oh my God, not another coin. All right, boys, we're heading back to Braavos.
But we were trying to get to Old Town.
Exactly.
Not today, we're not.
I think just the words would have opened it. She just happened to be holding the coin when she said them.
Yeah, so I don't remember how much we explained this in the summary, but she gets to the doors. It's locked. She shouts at the doors, Jack and... told me to come. She shows the coin and she yells Valar Morghulis, and then the doors open. So I agree, it was likely Valar Morghulis for the exact reason that you mentioned.
Yeah.
And also because, I mean, just generally speaking, Bravasi citizens seem to come in. We saw, you know, we saw that the young man sitting at the pool.
Yeah, and we skipped over it, but there were women crying over, presumably over dead bodies kind of thing.
Yes,
that's well.
True. So. That's true. And, you know, but the coin seems to be related to the Temple of the Many-Faced God because Captain Tarnesio took her there. She didn't know where exactly she was wanting to go. I don't recall her saying that she wanted to a specific temple.
Let's say it's the words. So people from Braavos know if they want to go and die in the Temple of the Many-Faced Gods, they need to come to the door, say Valar Morghulis, get let in. If you just walked up to a ship captain in salt pans and said Valar Morghulis, he'd be like, well, you're going to have to do it here. I'm not dragging you all the way to Braavos.
Right. I need a little more than that.
Yeah. Oh, you've got the coin. All right. Come on, then.
Yes. Right. So before departing Arya at Harrenhal, Jacken gave her the coin and said, if you want to see me again, give this to any man from Braavos and say Valar Morghulis. So it certainly seems like it's a calling card here. But We've also previously discussed about what Jack and Agar might have been up to since Harrenhal. We thought possibly he could have been a faceless man and the one that pushed Balon Greyjoy and Pike. And yeah. He very much, the face that he changed into after he was the Jack and Agar that Arya had known, was very much fitting of the description mentioned of the man, the alchemist, that
killed
Pate interacted with. Yes, I threw a blank on his name for a second. So in Harrenhal, he said, if you want to learn from him, you must follow me across the sea. So did he change his mind? And did he get another assignment before, you know, after leaving Arya, before crossing the sea? Did he change his mind and decide he had other stuff to do? Or so?
Yeah. No, we don't know. We might find out.
The man with the kindly faced man does say he doesn't recognize the name Jack and Hagar.
But, right.
You know, as we were just discussing, faceless men very well might not have names. So
right,
Jack and Hagar could have just been a alias he was using for his time in Westeros on that particular project.
She meets this dying man at the edge of the pool, and according to the notes, we have a pretty good idea of what he is. I'm going to say you wrote those notes because I'm not sure. But actually, I do have an idea because she learned her water dancing from the former first sword of Braavos, Cyril
right.
Forel. And he
yes.
said that at night, the men would go out and duel in the streets.
Yes, they're called Braavos.
Braavos.
Yes. Oh, so, and yeah, they're swordsmen who are always, they're known to pick fights with one another on a whim. And so it seems an awful lot like this very well was a Braavo who was possibly mortally wounded and came here to die. He was crying when she came across him. I don't remember if we mentioned that in the summary or not, but
I will say, probably... you're surprised that I came up with any of that.
I'm a little bit proud and surprised.
Thank you. So the cowled man asks her name and asks if she's afraid of death. And once she reveals who she truly is, he says, this is no place for Arya Stark. Now, there's a couple of interpretations of that. It's one is, well, you're a noble house. You don't belong here. This is for, you know,
right.
nameless people. But the right. other interpretation is, oh, you can stay here, but you're going to not be Arya Stark. You're going to lose that.
Yes. Yes. And, you know, the kiss of death, as we might call it, just a name I'm giving it right here. It seemed a bit like a death, like a are you afraid of death test. And, you know, she thinks while she's in the temple that, oh, at first she thought there was a bunch of people sleeping in alcoves. And then she said, no, look with your eyes. And she realizes, oh, they're likely dead or dying. And then we saw the man in the silvery cape who we were just talking about with the wound in his gut likely dying. So I guess if she is going to stay, not being afraid of death seems like a pretty fair prerequisite for staying in the House of Black and White.
I'll counter, though, that you can be not terribly afraid of death and not want to kiss a skull with a worm
yes.
coming out of its eyes. Okay. Like,
well, yes.
Being not terribly afraid to die and being not squeamish about skulls talking to you are different things, I would say.
I guess so. I guess maybe this test was, you know, what is your threshold?
Like, yeah.
What kind of creepiness are you willing to put up with?
Yeah. And as we said, the chapter ends with the man asking her if she's hungry, laughing about the fact she tried to eat the worm is why he asked that
right.
question. And
yeah.
she doesn't say, but she thinks, yes, but not for food. So what is she hungry for? I assume what she's talking about is the skills and abilities that these people have demonstrated between the cowled man and Jack and Hagar. She's seen things that are miraculous, and she wants some of that.
Yeah, that's logical. I was thinking along those same lines. I was thinking she was hungry for several things. Knowledge. She told the kindly faced man that Jack and Agar said he would teach her secrets. Possibly for some revenge. She sees all these people dying and figures maybe she can learn to kill people herself here with the, you know, some of the secrets that Jack and said he would teach her. And I was also thinking maybe she is hungry for a sense of belonging. She's been by herself for so long and wandering for so long. Maybe she's hungry for, you know, a place to settle down for a little bit.
Yeah, if you were a religion, a 10-year-old wandering into your temple is a perfect person to get your claws into because, you know, she's on her own and looking for belonging, and you can provide it as a religion. So, yeah.
Right, that's true.
All right, brief interlude while we talk spoilers. Join at our higher levels and you can listen into this. All right, do you have some background for us?
Yeah, sure. So while rowing Arya through the canals of Braavos, Daenyo Terris tells her that due to their role in the founding of the city, the Temple of the Moonsingers is the largest temple in the city. So who are these Moonsingers? Well, they actually came up a million years ago in Dany 7 of a Game of Thrones when...
I thought you meant a million years ago. I was like, jeez.
Wow.
Even by this book standards, that's a long time.
No, really, it was only about 4 years ago or so. But when Miri Mazdor told Dany that she studied the birthing songs of a Moonsinger while in Ashai. Back then, we told of how Moonsingers are leaders within the Jogos Nai community. The Jogos Nai being a group of people from the eastern side of Essos. What do they have to do with a city on the west coast of the continent? Well, about to tell you. When a group of slaves of the Valyrian Freehold overthrew their masters and took command of the ships they were sailing on, they fled up through Essos. During their travels, they came across Moonsingers in the land of the Jogos Nai. These women prophesied where these escaped slaves would find safety. In a lagoon behind a wall of pine-clad hills and sea stones, where the frequent fog would mask them from the Dragon Lords. The prophecy led them to what is now Braavos. And one final thing I'll say about this is George Martin was actually asked about the role Moonsingers might play in A Song of Ice and Fire. He said that they were instrumental in the founding of Braavos and that they do still exist today, but won't likely play a major role in the current story.
Hmm. We'll see if he holds to that. That's excellent. Thank you. That's good to know. Stuff I did not know. All right. Comparison with the television show. Arya does go to Braavos. The captain himself rows her all the way to the House of Black and White. They change her admittance. She's refused admittance. She waits on the step for a few days, chanting her prayer of people she wants to kill. Eventually, she gives up and throws the coin that she's had all this time into the canal. Later, we see her beheading a pigeon with needle and grabbing it, presumably to eat, not just for the fun of it. When a group of thieves see her smuggling this pigeon, they set upon her. But the guy who refused her entry to the temple now saves her. He appears behind her and the thieves take one look and scarper in the opposite direction. They know who he is and they are afraid of him. He then gives her back the coin that she threw into the canal and reveals himself to be Jack and Hagar. He had a different face, but he reveals himself to be Jack and Hagar. He then admits her to the House of Black and White, telling her that she must become no one. So, I don't know if that's a spoiler, because I don't remember if Jack and comes back and helps her, but that's where the TV show went anyway.
Right. Yeah. And, you know, that's a TV show decision. We'll see whether it holds in our story or not.
Exactly. Okay, Pedantry Corner. I've got a little one.
Yeah, you do. It made me laugh when I read it, too.
The Titan of Braavos blasts its horn every time a ship sails between its legs. Every ship.
It's a big port, too.
It's a huge port. That thing would be making noise all the time.
Oh, man.
You would never stop. Oh, yeah.
There should at least be an hours. You know, there should be hours of horn blowing.
Right, exactly. or just make all the ships wait. All right, come on. You eight come through. One blast, check them out. Yeah, it just felt like that was too much.
Yes, I hadn't thought about it one bit until I read that, and I was like, oh, that is very true. Yeah. That could be a problem.
Given the size of the port that Braavos is, the garrison, the arsenal's warships should just patrol the water between the garrison and the Titan. I mean, they should just patrol that water. There's always going to be ships coming. Check them all out, you know?
Yeah, and they could have a system where if there is a problem, one of the ships has a horn that it blows, and then the Titan blows its, does its noise making.
All right, news and notes. We had a terrific sustainer call just yesterday.
We did.
And wasn't as well attended as normal for any particular reason?
No, I can't think of any. I don't know what could have gone wrong. It turned out that there's a little checkbox when I make a post on Buy Me a Coffee. There's a little tiny little checkbox that says email this to your members. And apparently I forgot to click that because the post happened, but it never went out to people. So you had to actively go find it.
Find it, yeah.
And fortunately, on Monday, Derek messaged me and said, I heard on the episode that we have a call tomorrow, but I didn't get any info about that. And I went, oh, oh no.
Despite that, we had listeners from three continents come, so, you know.
We did, yes.
Yeah, so it's always fun.
Yes, and you posed a good question. I thought that was a fun question you came up with.
I just asked if there was any character you wish, to this point in the story, had a different story arc than they'd had. I mean, there's some characters who I think where their story's gone is kind of perfect. Like Tyrion, for instance. I think it's perfect what's happened to him. Good, the bad, the indifferent. It's all right. It's been a great story. Some characters you maybe wish went differently. And you and I went in different directions. You wished for better for Ned and Arya.
Yes.
And I wished for worse for Cersei.
Yeah, right. I think George was with me on the call. I think he also
George definitely agreed with you, yeah.
Yeah, I also mentioned Arya. I wish, as this is an Arya chapter, a little girl, I just hate. It just breaks my heart to see all the strife and terrible things she's gone through.
All right. So the next thing in news and notes is some cockamamie. This is like a Dan Brown novel.
So some are suggesting that George Martin's recent post on his blog is a message about the missing A Song of Ice and Fire books, Winds of Winter and A Dream of Spring. So the post is a picture of William Faulkner, and the post is titled Words of Wisdom. And then there is a quote over top of his picture that goes, "Dreams have only one owner at a time. That's why dreamers are lonely." And then the post had those little tags that he does at the bottom, and it was tagged Dreams and Writing. So what does any of that have to do with A Song of Ice and Fire and our missing books?
Interjection?
Yeah.
It's something he was doing when he could have been writing. Just
That could be it. That could be the answer. Well, yes, I agree. Not much on the surface, considering we're all dreaming of those books together. So we are not lonely dreamers. But for the bored, hopeful A Song of Ice and Fire fans, apparently there's some hidden meaning in this post. And I'll break it down for you. So the title, Words of Wisdom, have the same initials as Winds of Winter. The quote speaks of dreamers, and we're all waiting and hoping for A Dream of Spring. Now, here's the kicker. I forgot to mention that this was in the post. There is a blue rose randomly included in the post, and it's germane to the conversation because of the famous blue roses that Rhaegar gives Lyanna at the tourney at Harrenhal. And then, of course, the post is tagged with dreams and writing. So, maybe. I'm sure George Martin likes clues and puzzles and such things. But I did look it up. It was posted on March 11th, and that is neither Faulkner's birthday or death day. So the quote could have been chosen for its dream references as clues. Or possibly he was just thinking of it and decided to post it, and we're all heading down this Viserys Targaryen path toward madness while we wait.
Yeah, that seems like a winner to me.
Yeah.
Just a reminder that, this episode will be followed by a week of silence. We'll be 2 weeks between episodes. Just bear with us. We're both going on vacation the same week, and so we are just taking a week off. We'll be back.
A guest host won't save us this time. Since
Not this time.
Neither of us are available.
Yeah.
And we got a new Buy Me a Coffee sustainer. Chris Gate has joined us at the Squire tier. So thank you so much. Your support and the support of all of our sustainers does really help sustain this venture. We use the word sustainer for a reason. You really keep us going. And thank you so much for that.
Thank you, Chris Gate. And we got a review on Apple Podcasts from Rave the First. A sound
investment. We know Rave. We know Rave on
Discord. Oh, we do know
Discord.
Rave. Yes.
Yes.
Yeah. A sound investment. What a show. I've been hooked since the first episode. These wonderful hosts and best friends are excellent Westerosi tour guides. So good that even Elio and Linda appear for a special episode of the show. Whether it's your first time with the books or a return reading, you will not be disappointed with all this extra content. They are constantly opening my eyes to things I've missed along the way, and I truly feel like I'm among friends discussing the series. You are. Even if they can't hear me. Chime in. We'll listen. I have never listened to a single podcast before them, and they have converted me. Bless them for remembering Rick and more than the rest of his family does. All the gold for all. Thank you, Rave. That's terrific.
Great review, Rave. Thank you very much. Yes.
All right, let's conclude this. So Arya's got a new home, perhaps, it seems. She appears to have been accepted into the Many-Faced God's temple. But what's in store for her now? Will she learn the tricks of the trade? Will she be able to switch faces and voices whenever she wants? Will this catalogue of nicknames become actually more than just nicknames? Will she have characters to fit them all?
She's been preparing for this for a while now, being different people. Well, I know one thing for certain. She is a very long way from home, and she has every right to be terrified. But I think she is not old enough and aware enough to realize this and thinks she has to be brave. And it's okay. You're allowed to be scared. I would be scared as a middle-aged man walking, being isolated from everybody I've ever known in a foreign continent.
Especially if the first thing someone does when you get there is pull back their hood to reveal a skull face with a worm growing out of the eye socket. That's hardly the welcome I was looking for.
I would be tracking down the Titan's daughter. Take me back across. I'm out of this place.
The door might have been locked on the way in, but it's not going to be locked to me on the way out. So there's no sign of Jack and Hagar in the book. So are you just camping there? Will the coin make her an acolyte?
If so,
what does her training include? Plastic surgery?
That's a good guess. That's a good guess. It's good stuff. It's we're embarking with Arya. We spent so much time last book kind of just rehashing the Riverlands and chapter after chapter.
Yeah, it's definitely good to give her a new vista. All right, up next is Cersei, our first number two of the book, unless you count what leaked out of Tywin's guts. I love it when the joke has been there in the notes the whole time and you're just reading it as we get there.
I did read it yesterday. It got me again. We have Tywin's funeral coming up and we begin to see some angling for that power vacuum we talked of with Tywin's death.
No doubt about it. All right, there's four ways that you could help us. You could leave us a 5-star rating and a positive review like Rave the First did. You could buy merchandise at ghostsofharrenhal.threadless.com. You could buy us a cup of Arbor Gold at buymeacoffee.com/ghostsharrenhal. Become a sustainer at any of the various levels as Chris Gate did. Or you could just donate directly to our cause through our website, ghostsofharrenhal.buzzsprout.com.
And if you're looking for more ways to interact with us, keeping up on the latest Ghosts of Harrenhal news and developments, well, you can always check us out on our social medias. You can follow us on Twitter at Ghosts Harrenhal. We're on Facebook, Instagram. I highly recommend you join us on Discord, and we're also on YouTube.
Thank you for listening.
Thanks.
Bye.
Bye.